Okay, back to you.
Back to me. I think I'm going to go, and this is one of my favorite classic movies. I think it took me a while to watch it. It's called Dodsworth, and it was made in 1936, and it stars the wonderful Walter Huston, who was amazing in this, as was Ruth Chatterton as his wife. And the whole cast was wonderful. And basically, it's about a marriage dismantling. And Walter Huston, it was a play. It's the book was written by Sinclair Lewis, and it was a play. And Robert and my honey, Walter Huston, played the part for a year. And then he got the movie. And Fran Chatterton. And, of course, Mary Astor, who was quite lovely in this. Paul Lucas. Mm-hmm. What's that lady's name? Please, the werewolf, madam. I can't ever.
Oh, Maria Uspenskaya.
Good book.
Has really just, I guess, is the one scene as someone who sees right through Ruth Chatterton and sort of calls her out on her age.
I love that scene. It is a really good movie. So Ruth is, they live in Zenith. Sam is, he's got to be a millionaire in today's money. He had Dodsworth Motor Company. And she had her own money because her father was a Zenith brewery owner. So she had her own money. But their daughter had just gotten married, and she said, I want a new life. So he retires, and they're going to go to Europe and have this new life. So there, and Ruth is like, you know, nobody thinks of a day over 32, 30 even. Huh? You're like, she's delusional. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, whatever. Raises his eyebrows. Anyway, they go on to the cruise, and she's pretending she's continental, sophisticated. And on the first night, she said, don't you want, we have to dress. And, you know, wearing a gown, and Sam's in, you know, a tux. And he's walking through, and everybody's looking at him. They're all casual. You don't have to dress. You don't dress on the first night. But, of course, Ruth didn't know it. And then we meet David Niven, who's very good. He has a brief part, but he's the first flirtation that Fran, a.k.a. Ruth Chatterton, has. And she comes in, waltzing in with this really, you know, puffy-sleeved gown. I never think it's bad form to dress for dinner. Oh, it's a simple little dinner frock. I love that. Mm-hmm. She cracks me up. And he says, anybody who looks as charming as you could never be wrong. And Sam's like, ha ha, very good. Anyway, he tolerates his wife's flirtation with this guy, with David Niven, and he kind of does his own thing. He's all excited, and she's just pretentious as can be, and flirts with this guy throughout the whole cruise. And then the last night of the cruise, he tries to take her up on the offer, and she just kind of goes, what's wrong with this thing? Can you hear? Am I doubling off?
No, I hear you. I hear you. I mean,
am I going me? Me?
No. Okay. I didn't hear that. No.
Good. I hope it's only me. Anyway, on the last night of the cruise, she flirts with this dude the whole time. I mean, the minute she meets him, her eyelashes are fluttering like, you know, you've never seen in your life. And he, you know, tries to kiss her, does this thing, and she says, don't you think we've been seeing too much of each other? And she's all offended, and he kind of tells her, you think you're so sophisticated, you kill me, whatever. And she gets offended, and they can't go to England because she's embarrassed and thinks he's going to talk about her in England. And they're right in England, and Sam wants to go to England. On that night, Sam meets Mrs. Beautiful Mary Astor, Edith Cartwright, and they become friends, you know, and she's sort of like this lone woman, whatever, and I think she kind of has a hots for him a little bit. Anyway, they go to France, and Fran is as pretentious. She starts speaking, mon Dieu, and doing all this annoying stuff, and pretending she's part of big social stuff. And they have a party, and then Fran says it's her birthday. And she said she just turned 35. And he raised his eyebrows. And I love Mary Astor. She said, my dear, you'll look back at 35 as a wonderful age. And she said, well, I hope I look as good as you do when I'm your age. And she said, my dear, you're certain to. Anyway, which was really like, me, ouch. You know?
Yeah.
Really, just let her be delusional. Anyway, there's also Paul Lucas, who plays Arnold Islin, who is like, what is he supposed to be? Is he really supposed to be like this money guy, or is he just sort of like a chiseler?
I can't remember what his
first
story
part.
Is.
He was a financier. Yeah. She met him, and he was the guy she tells Sam to leave. But you see the scene, which is really amazing, like a real married couple after that party. And you see the scene. She says, Sammy, get my cold cream. She's got cold cream all over her face. And he's walking around in a T-shirt and his underwear and garters, holding up his socks. And they're fighting and they're doing, and it's very much real. And she tells him to go away, go home, because she has rented a place with her friend, Rene Denable, someplace. Yeah. And he goes away. And she has an affair with this Arnold Islin, played to sleazy perfection by Paul Lucas. And Sam goes home, and then he finds out that she has been having the affair. He calls them together. Paul Lucas is trying to warm his way out of it. Fran kind of admits to it. And then they reconcile. He said, we have to start fresh, whatever. And she is afraid of getting old. That's her main thing. Her daughter's 20, married, whatever. And Sam's retiring. She wanted him to retire. She says he's rushing at old age. But, you know, they just don't belong together. They're just not a mix. They're not a match.
It's the thing of when you're a middle-aged couple and your child has left the house, and you find out you want different things.
Definitely.
And it's not too late. And so they come to that, and it doesn't take too long for them to sort of realize it, accept it, and move on. And I think that's why it holds up so well, is that what it's about is so universal of just every couple having to constantly reassess, I guess, are we still in sync? Do we still want the same thing?
And they certainly did not.
They did not. And we're rooting for him to be with Mary Astor, who clearly is a soulmate. And, you know, I guess, as, you know, as good as Ruth Chatterton is in the movie, I wonder if she's really miscast, because in a sense she really is sophisticated, because she's Ruth Chatterton, star of stage and screen, and I wonder if she should really have less of that polish at the beginning, and you feel more of the effort in what she's trying to be, because she really is quite sophisticated. It was Faye Bainter on the stage, and I wonder if she had a more regular person.
Well, I'm
quality.
Sure, because she was not as glamorous as Ruth. And Ruth Ruth started movies in her 30s. She did a lot of pre-codes. She did like this groundbreaking female where she was like the head of a company.
Oh, right.
And, you know, she would have have rendezvous with all her underlings at her house to talk business. And she was married to George Brent at the time, and they had a 2-year marriage. But Mary Astor was going through her trial, the big scandal about her diaries, and while she's doing this, and she said that playing Edith Courtright helped her. Had she been playing some manic character, some horrible character, she said somehow she brought that tranquility to get her through it. And Ruth helped her a lot. Ruth went every day after. Ruth went with her when she could. And she also was a character witness with her. And Mary said that Ruth was also going through, it hit home because she was 43 at the time of making Dodsworth. And she was, you know, she wanted to be even worse than she portrayed. And she had lots of fights with William Wyler, and she ended up slapping his face. Very, very rude. But I get what you mean, But I really liked her in this.
I do too. I really like her in it very, very much. I mean, she really acts it well. And that's really, even though it's sort of at the end of her career as a star, it's kind of the movie she's remembered for. If she hadn't done Dodsworth, she would just be a figure where, you know, people who are real aficionados of pre-code movies, nobody else would know who she is. But that's one really major work that she's a part of, you know, a William Wyler film. And then that was his thing, directing actors. He was good at so many things in terms of where to put the camera, of course. But I think his main gift was getting great performances out of people.
Even though he annoyed them because of...
Yeah.
But David Niven hated working for him, but he said, I admit, you know, because he used to make them redo scenes and do things.
They do take after take after take. And I don't think he always would tell them what he was looking for. It was just keep doing it and we'll see what happens. But I mean, Betty Davis swore by him. Laurence Olivier said he owed everything to him. I mean, these
are
pretty good
people. And then David Niven said so too. I mean, he said he did. Yeah. I mean, he ended up doing Wuthering Heights, you know, so he couldn't have been too bad. And Ruth didn't like him, and she just demanded facials and everything every day. And yeah, because she wanted to look her best. And you can see her being grand. I heard a story about her, and I read a story about her with Barbara Stanwyck in her early career. And Barbara couldn't cry. And Ruth is on stage with her assistant or something. And I think she needed, what are they, glycerin tablets to help her cry? And she had heard that Barbara's this great actress coming from Broadway. And then she's loud. It's like totally Fran. Look, she can't even cry. You know, she's saying out loud.
Yeah.
Of course, Barbara Stanwyck and she were never pals. Anyway, it's a good movie. You see people growing. They send their daughter off.
Yeah.
She's married. And... Yeah. Women do get, and men too, they have their midlife crises.
Sure.
They just change. I mean, what do? The kid's gone. Now we have to look at each other. So she thinks going away on a trip will be something for her. She has another affair and gets engaged to Court, a poor baron. You know, their money was all taken in the war, whatever. And that's where our lovely... who you can pronounce her last name comes in.
Maria Slinskaya.
With that killer scene. But the thing is, Fran, because of that, does not really see the light of day. She runs back to Sam. And after he dumps her, and she's pretending she dumped him. But the ending is very satisfying. You're going to love it.
Yes.
And it's I don't explain it as well. But it is a really good movie. I loved all the acting. And, you know, Ruth Chatterton was very sophisticated. But if you've ever seen people, and I have, in these towns, and they're like, they think that they're fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-foos.
Yeah.
You know, she was a big cheese there. But she was not sophisticated, hence the first night out. And then she learned and really was obnoxious about it. And she was a horrible gossip, but it's a good movie. And I have to say, Walter Huston, I love him. He was amazing.
Yeah, it's a great performance.
Yes.
It is. It is. Okay, my next one is from my fantasy chapter, and it's Portrait of Jenny from 1948, which could also be in a love story chapter because that's what it is. Just happened to have a fantasy element. And I think the beautiful thing about this movie is just that it's a love so strong, and the fact that time has kind of wrecked it because they weren't born at the right time, they're not going to let that get in the way. And so they meet in these little snippets in which she's a different age every time they kind of get together, but so rarely in sync. And so it's a love beyond time, which not even time can destroy. And Joseph Cotten is a struggling painter. Jennifer Jones is this sort of woman of mystery from a showbiz family, schooled in a convent, acrobats. And they meet once in a while. He's never quite sure when she'll appear. And it was not a hit in its day. And I think it probably because it doesn't really explain anything, which we don't have a problem with nowadays. We accept kinds of things as, you know, there's just no explanation to why this is happening, but they never spell it out. And so it's kind of a mood piece. It's just this beautiful visual poem with breathtakingly photographed in black and white.
And then...
And it casts a
spell. The tidal wave scene.
Which won an Oscar for special effects.
Yeah.
The other wonderful element to this is that there's a subplot that's kind of a mirror of the main plot, which is Ethel Barrymore as an art dealer, who, without saying anything, obviously takes quite a shine to young Joseph Cotton. And again, it's a love that's been wrecked by time. She's much too old for him and would never express her true feelings. But so we have this other love. And again, that element of time is something you have to battle in both cases to sort of have the love of your dreams. And so it's just an endlessly fascinating story with no easy answers. Just like I said, it's poetic, it's beautiful, it's mysterious.
It is.
And it retains all those qualities. And then Jennifer Jones is, Joseph Cotton is wonderful in it, very sensitive and touching and understated. And Jennifer Jones is not really one of my favorites. This is maybe my favorite of her performances because really nobody else could have played it.
I can't see any
other actress
I agree.
Of that period who could play basically a 14-year-old girl and so it's sort of her Song of Bernadette mode and then be this beautiful, sexy woman. I don't mean like her on the sun sexy, not that overt, but just a sensual woman. And what other actresses of that time could have pulled that off
easily? This is my favorite film with her as well.
Yeah. So I think it's their fourth film together and they're best and their best teaming, you know, in terms of chemistry as well. So yeah, I love this one. And people, like I said, it's not that well known. It was not a hit, but everyone I know who has seen it seems to love it. So
me too. And you can catch it. Usually check it out on YouTube. You guys, I won't post it because then they'll just take it away anyway. So, check out Portrait of Jenny. I think you can find it on YouTube. And in its entirety, and it is a wonderful film, and it's magical and just beautiful, beautiful film.
Yep.
And Lillian Gish is in it, and she has a wonderful part as well. Okay, I'm going to do mine that's kind of like that. It's also sort of a, you know, it's otherworldly. Eddie Muller played it for the first time on TCM, but I'd seen it before. I bought it on Amazon Prime. And it was not restored for like $1.99. And so I watched it and I loved it. And then when I talked to Eddie, he told me that they had gotten it and that they were going to preserve it and put it on TCM around New Year's Eve. And the movie is called Repeat Performance. And it stars Joan Leslie and Louis Hayward. First film of Richard Basehart and Lovey Howell, the wonderful Natalie Schaefer, and it is just a really good film. The whole premise is, if you could go back to the following year, it's New Year's Eve, and something terrible happens to Sheila Page, who is Joan Leslie, and she's going to talk to her friend, with her friend, William Williams, a poet, and they're going up to see my boyfriend, Tom Conway. And all of a sudden, things are changed. William Williams gone, whatever. And she sees that she's actually gone a year. She's gone back a year in time. And she figures that in this year, she can change what's happened so that what ultimately happened New Year's Eve will never happen again. And it's interesting, no matter what she does, can she beat fate? Or is fate fate? And it may change, but it stays the same. And I think it's a really good movie, and it's well performed. Louis Hayward's horrible in it. meaning he's such a horrible man, you can't even imagine anyone being attracted to him. But yeah. I guess he came home from the war and he was shell-shocked. And he was married to Ida Lupino, and they were combative, and they had to get divorced. And in this movie, he was just combative with Joan Leslie, and you never want you, why is she with him? You know, it's she's just yeah. not a good guy. And it's an interesting film because would we? Because 2020, let's face it, has not been right. joy to the world time. You yeah. know what I mean? It's been a rough yeah. year. For almost everyone, yeah. unless you're really rich and, you know, off on your yacht. It's been a yeah. really horrible year. And
I like Joan Leslie in this, and I don't really like her in her early famous movies where she's just a little too perky for me.
But she's
like
a little kid.
Well, I know. I'm saying I don't like her in that period. Yeah, I just find her extremely
either.
Annoying.
Me too.
And Yankee Doodle Dandy and Sergeant York and even I Dancing with Fred Astaire, I Wish It Was Someone Else and The Sky's the Limit. But as she gets a little more mature, and she's not in movies for much longer, but in this and Born to Be Bad with
Joan
Fontaine.
Oh, I love that. That's such
I
a
like
great
her
movie.
As a woman. I like her as a woman, not as
yes.
a perky teenager.
And she was a beautiful woman.
Yeah, and she was actually got to be much more beautiful just as she was sort of finishing up. But I like the opening of this movie, which just shows the impact of Mildred Pierce on that era
right.
of film, because it's almost the same opening. But it's not. There are several movies that they love to start with that some climax that you'll get back to way you know much later and have all the answers. And it does that well. And also like that it's a movie about the theater world from that period, which, you know, there's a number of, like The Velvet Touch and the most famous one, of course, All About Eve. But that mid-century, you know, evocation of the Broadway world, which is very glamorous and
very.
Black and white.
This
so,
was 1947.
Yeah.
And very,
yeah, like,
you know,
like
Sheila gets all these
yeah.
flowers backstage. It is very glamorous.
Yeah.
She's like
yeah.
written about in the papers and things like that. Whereas now
right.
it's not like that. And
yeah.
of course it's not like that because there's no Broadway.
God
only knows
that.
When there will be, which is just really sad.
Sure.
Anyway, it is a good movie. Joan is lovely. I love William Williams, Richard Base Hart. I thought he did a
yeah.
great job. And this is an
yeah.
FYI. In the book, Sinclair Lewis, no, he didn't write this. He wrote Ann Vickers, but I don't know if we'll
yeah.
be able to talk about that one. But he was supposed to be, Barney was supposed to be the good guy, Barney Page, who is a Louis Hayward character. And she was supposed to be the shrew, this horrible shrew. But it was going to be cast as Sylvia Sidney. And they twisted that around. And William in the book was William/Mary, a transsexual. And
wow.
that is why William/Mary ended up in an asylum, not because he was a sensitive poet who did something at FAO Schwartz and Lovey had him committed, you know? So
I think it's kind of vague. Yeah, it's kind of vague. And you're thinking, what am I missing? And
yeah.
I think you just answered it.
Yeah, it's weird. And so they didn't obviously do that. They changed the whole plot, but it was very good.
Yeah.
And it is very much, I think, prevalent to think, would you change 2020? And would you go to 2019? And how could it change? How could we change it? Is there any way we could change this? Could we get in touch with the virus and do it? And probably no. But wouldn't we want to try?
Sure.
So it's a provocative movie, and it's a good movie.
Yeah.
And it was first time played on TCM. And the restoration is beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would recommend anyone to see this film.
Yeah. So should I do number five, or are we nearing our cutoff?
Well, if you don't mind doing number five, that's fine. But if you want to cut off, we can cut off.
No, I'll do it. Stars in My Crown from 1950, which it coincidentally was directed by Jacques Tourneur, who directed I Walk with a Zombie, and they couldn't be more different from each other.
God.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like, again, I mean, it's really nothing like Rachel and the Stranger, but again, it's another 19th century story that people think is a Western, but it's not really a Western.
Not at all.
It's a story of a parson and basically an episodic tale of life in this small town after the Civil War. They never say exactly where we are, but it's sort of the South, because there's elements of which side were you on in the Civil War, and there's a KKK element in one of the episodes. Yeah. And also, okay, so it's kind of a Western-y thing, but they never quite tell you where you are. But it's just a beautiful episodic film from the point of view of a boy played by Dean Stockwell, who's an orphan who lives with his aunt and uncle, the parson Joel McCrae, and his wife Ellen Drew. And there's another epidemic in this movie, coincidentally a typhoid epidemic that takes a long time to get under control. There's a traveling carnival that comes through. There's, as you mentioned, an almost lynching. And the episodes have so much emotion and texture, and they're just all beautifully done. And I love Joel McCrae. He's my favorite classic movie actor. And
oh, he's
one of his best parts. Yeah,
he's so great.
He's just wonderful in this.
Comedy,
he gets
drama.
To be,
he could be.
Yeah,
everything.
He does it all.
And
this is a good part because it gets to show it.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's handsome to boot. and always good with whoever's playing opposite him. He's such a generous actor, always giving it the scene to them, and it only makes him more charming and kind of irresistible.
But he didn't think he was a good actor. That's what kills me.
I'm saying all that is sort of part of what's so good about him. He's so self-effacing.
Right.
And Dean Stockwell is terrific as the boy.
Oh, he's
and
it's such a great actor.
It's got a really good cast.
Yeah.
So it's a little charmer. Again, it didn't cause any great waves because it wasn't trying to be anything more than it is, which is nothing to sneer at. I mean, what it accomplishes is pretty hard to do, to make something just feel like it's captured this world without effort. And, it's just a beautiful movie.
Also, it's sort of, timely too, where there's James Mitchell as the doctor.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He doesn't believe in the prayer bit, and Joel McCrae is like, pray, 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 and you're going to, you know, not die. You know, if you pray, you won't die. And the doctor is like, we got to use science. And then they kind of come together saying, you just can't pray, and you just can't use science. We need to do them both together, which is very kind of today. years later, it's weird, isn't it? But these movies are sometimes prophetic on what we're going to go to. You think you're going to go forward, yet we're back in these times again.
And just when they're sort of fixed in as to what they are, like what we're going through now, is that it colors two of the movies I've mentioned with the epidemics, and suddenly they take on other things that they never could have imagined. These residences that, 50, 70 years later, now that is attached to them. And so, watching them now, those two anyway, would have all these sort of shivers of things that they didn't have even last year.
Right.
So,
and just like repeat performance, would we go back?
Yes.
And could we do things differently? And could we change things?
Exactly.
So I think those are good choices. And really, check it out. I don't know if you can find it. I got it, like I said, on Amazon Prime for $1.99 before it was restored.
And TCM shows it because it's MGM, so it's in the cycle, but you just never know when they're going to get back to it. So.
I think Eddie, he showed it for the first time a few days before the New Year's. It was the last.
I was talking about Stars in My Crown.
Oh,
I'm
that
sorry.
One. Yes, it's in there. I've seen that. And I see it come around much more than probably a lot of the movies that we've mentioned. I don't think I've ever seen Portrait of Jenny on TCM.
I don't know. I've got that on DVD, so I've never had to look for it. I'm not sure about that. So
Okay, I'm going to do one more movie, and I'll do it quickly. It's called Ann Vickers, and it was made in 33 or
34? 33, yeah.
Starring the lovely Irene Dunne, and of my guy, Walter Huston. And
another Sinclair Lewis story.
Right? Yeah. And Edna Mae Oliver and Conrad Nagel. And it's a very good film. And it has really heavy duty stuff. She's like a feminist, a suffragette. This is before, or maybe the Americans hadn't gotten into World War I yet. And they were having a party for social workers. She was a social worker and a suffragette and all this other stuff. And she was going to go to, she was a career woman. She was a feminist, like I said. And she meets this guy, Lafayette, named Leif, who is a real creep, but charms her. And she ends up having sex with him. And he does not get shipped overseas, but ends up getting engaged to a rich man's daughter. And Anne tells him she's pregnant. And he's like, oh, great. Oh, great. I'll do the right thing. And she ends up getting an abortion, which is huge. They don't talk about it as an abortion. But her friend, who's a doctor, says, well, go to Havana. And then she rests back at her friend's house. And she said, I should have had her. I should have had her. That's not, you know, that's an abortion. And that's what it was meant to be in the book. And she had premarital sex, got knocked up, and had an abortion. That's like a wowza. Then she goes to prison. Yeah. To see this prison thing, and it's horrible there. And, you know, they have riots. This guy is horrible. He wants to get cat of nine tails, little lady. It'd be great to get that back. He's just evil, evil, evil deluxe. And Anne hates it, but they get a compromising picture of her with the doctor, and she asks him to keep the women out of solitary, and she leaves, and she writes a book. And it's got this great review by this judge who she's never met, who is Walter Huston. They finally meet. He's sort of a charlatan. He said he does nothing wrong, but he said he took tax tips, you know, from people, you know, crooks. So that's a crime. Anyway, she falls in love with him. He falls in love with her, but he's married. And she ends up getting pregnant by him. And she keeps the baby, whatever. He gets convicted. He goes to jail. She loses her job because of morality. And she, you know, then begs for leniency for him. And that just doesn't happen. But it's an interesting movie because you see, I don't know. I mean, abortion.
I think the shocking thing about the movie is, you know, obviously it's a pre-code movie, but what's shocking about it is I think it's the only movie in which a woman has an unwed pregnancy twice in the same movie.
Yes.
That is a lot.
She's like a slut in this movie. It's like, what is wrong?
So, I mean, usually when that happens, that's the story of the movie.
Yeah.
As you said, she gets past that first one, and then it happens again. You think, I can't believe I just saw a movie in which a woman from 1933 got pregnant twice by two different men without being married.
And one of them is married and going to jail.
I mean, yeah, right. So it's a lot of kind of in its way, it's as pre-code as Female in terms of, wow, it's one you've got to see to sort of get the full experience of what pre-code could actually be.
And it was
because
good.
This one
exactly.
Pushed it pretty far. Yeah, yeah.
But
this one pushed it
it's also
far.
A really good production. It's not sort of like a, you know, baby face, which I love.
No, I mean, she's not playing a tramp. She's not playing a prostitute.
She's an intelligent, educated woman who makes these choices. She believed Leif. Leif was a big fat liar. Marry me.
Yeah.
And, you know, she believed him. She figured she was sophisticated enough, but she believed him. And when she met Barney, the judge, who she ended up getting pregnant with again, even though he was married, and going to the slammer, And then she got fired from her job. And it is. It's like, really, wow. And it is an edge. You know what I mean? It's not like some sleazy kind
not
of
at all.
Deal.
No.
It's like up and up. All these people are educated. All these people are this and that.
Well, that's the thing. It's sort of like acknowledging that, you know, this is what real people are. Do this is life.
Right.
This isn't like the seamy side, the dark side. Yeah.
Not the underbelly. Not, you know, like malls and dames and tomatoes and hoods. Right.
Yeah. Right. No, it's just sort of grown-up people making grown-up decisions and dealing with the consequences, and it's just. When you see those pre-code movies, you think, oh, they were adults just like they are, people are now. Even though, like I said, in the decades in between, a lot of these things were just not really talked about.
No,
and so
because
it's kind of
it's
an eye opener.
Right.
It's definitely an eye opener.
When I saw it, I was shocked. I thought Irene Dunne was really lovely in this, and she didn't sing, and I love her, but I just hate when she sings in almost every movie, even when it's a drama. And it's not that she doesn't have a good voice, but, you know, like I was listening to opera in the womb, so forget it. And yes, so that kind of turned me off. Anyway, it's a very good movie. Walter Houston's great in it. That horrible, the guy Bruce Cabot,
yeah.
Mildred Pierce's Bert. And many
no,
other
that's
films.
Bruce Bennett. That's Bruce Bennett who plays Mr. Pierce.
Well,
Bruce Cabot's the guy in King Kong.
Oh, really?
The same year as Ann Vickers. Yeah,
they look
Bruce
alike.
Bennett. Yeah, they're both a kind of rugged faced,
wow.
sort of macho type.
Well, thank you for telling me.
Yeah. I think actually Bruce Cabot's a better actor. He had a little more life. Bruce Bennett was kind of like a rock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sort of
like. And lived to be 100. Bruce
I Bennett. Guess. Being a yeah. rock, you're like yeah. a snapping turtle. You know, you can go on and on and on.
I guess that's what happened. Yes.
Anyway, yes. I had so much yes. fun, John, as usual.
Me too.
I loved your choices, and I can go on and on.
Yours too.
You know, I can be very articulate when I'm not on the air, and sometimes when I do these, I get ahead of myself. But all I can tell you is these are all really good movies to watch. And
yeah.
we're not the only ones who think so, because when people watch these movies, they go either wow or, you know, they really like them. So
yeah.
check them out. They're all interesting for very different reasons, and to see different types of performances from actors that you don't
sure.
expect. So, John, once again, my dear, I am looking forward to our next show.
Okay.
It's your turn to think of something we do.
Okay.
Okay, you promise?
All right. Okay. Not this minute, though.
No.
Yeah.
Give me some time to do it. And you can find John at Amazon.com. I will link you up with all his books. I have a few of them, and I
Thank
love
you.
Them. And I'm going to get this one that you have, movies we should have seen. And he has a book coming out next year. Yay. And I will, like I said, I'll link you to his page, and you can check him out. So thanks again.
Great.
And thank you,
Grace.
Everybody.
Thank you.
And thank you, John. Again.
Okay.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care, everybody. Bye.
Listen to the stories of Tinseltown. They're not a-